The following presentation, My Brother Dan, A Talk with Parents, by Bishop Thomas Gumbleton, Second National Retreat for Catholic Parents of Gay and Lesbian Children, October 6th through 8th, 1995, Villa Maria Retreat House, Stamford, Connecticut.
I'm going to share my story, and then Bob suggested dialogue and questions, or there can be some tonight, but it'll be more just telling you about how I came out, I guess, is what you really call it. But first, I feel it's very important to thank Bob and Janine, too, who invited me to be here tonight. They've been a significant influence in my life over the last few years, and since I've come to know them, and I'm very grateful for what they do for the whole church and the whole New Ways ministry, so others who are involved in it also. It's a very, very important thing for our church, and I think we need to acknowledge that and thank them for it, and I certainly do that myself. And ask you to also not only be grateful to them, but pray for them, because you may know or may not know they're under rather serious pressure. And we're hoping it's all going to work out, but you don't know. So we need to pray for them, Bob, Janine, and the whole New Ways ministry. They invited me to participate in one of their national meetings. It was, I think it'll be 4 years ago this coming March. And to be together with two other bishops, Bishop Ken Untner from Saginaw in Michigan and Bishop Bill Hughes from Covington, Kentucky, they invited us to make a presentation to this national meeting in Chicago. And our task was simply to sort of give a sense of what a bishop's pastoral response is or should be to gay and lesbian people. And before we went there, each of us was contacted directly or indirectly by the papal nuncio, kind of warning us not to go. Bishops shouldn't be part of that, but we talked it over and decided we would go anyway. And since then, I'm very, very grateful that I did, because it was a significant turning point in a sense of my life. Because as I prepared to speak there, I wasn't sure what I was going to say. And I thought about it very carefully, partly because I wanted to be careful not to get into too much trouble with the papal nuncio. But most of all, I was trying to decide what to say concerning myself. And I must confess, when I got there to speak, there were three of us who were sitting at the table, and the whole time I think Ken spoke first, or somebody else, yeah, Ken spoke first, and I was second, and Bill was going to be third. And I was sitting there debating within myself what to say. I sort of had two presentations in my head. And as I walked up to the stand, I said, I'm going to do it. I'm going to tell my own story. And I hadn't sure that I was ready to do that. Because it's obviously very, very hard for gay people, lesbian people to come out, to make that decision. But it's also hard for people like ourselves who are not gay or lesbian, but who have in your case, a child, in my case, a brother who had come out not very long before. And I wasn't sure how that would affect my own ministry, you know, as he became very public in being a gay person. But anyway, I decided I would tell the story, and this is sort of the story that I told then. I'm adding to it a little bit because I reflect now on my own life situation. I grew up in a very Catholic family. There were 10 children in the family. I was the sixth, and there were 8 boys and 2 girls in our family. And I went to parochial school, and was very close to the church as an altar boy and all that sort of thing. My parents were very faithful Catholics. We grew up during the Depression. It was a hard time in some ways until after the Second World War, everything became much better. But I went into the seminary when I was in the ninth grade. So I was like 14 years old when I went into the seminary. And I took to the seminary life very much. I enjoyed it and did well. And so I went 12 straight years through the seminary and was very much influenced by the kind of training that I had there. And when I was ordained, it was 1956, at that time when I was ordained a priest, I, as I look back now, I realize how unprepared I was to be a pastoral minister to gay or lesbian people. I remember hearing confessions, and the parish where I was stationed, this is back in the 1950s, and it was a very large parish. We had lots and lots of confessions. People went to confession then every couple of weeks. And around Easter, Christmas, and so on, there were just hours and hours in the confessional. And so during that time, there would be people coming to me in confession who were gay. And although, you know, I didn't even know that term then. And would confess committing acts with other men. Usually that would be the case. And I remember how dogmatic I was and how decisive I was and just telling them that's wrong, you have to stop, of course, and so on. And I thought, trying to give them good advice, well, you know, you probably won't fall into those sins if you separate yourself from the places where that happens. You don't get away from the occasions of sin and so on. I thought I was giving good pastoral advice. Well, of course, I wasn't even beginning to understand the whole situation. I had no clue. And so I'm sure that I was, even though I tried to be helpful and pastoral, as I look back, I'm sure I was totally insensitive, totally not understanding, and very hurtful, I'm sure, in many cases to people who came to me for help. In those days in the confessional, I don't ever remember anybody coming to me outside the confessional, but in the confessional, obviously looking for help from the church, and I was not in any position to give it. And as I look back, I can see why. First of all, in my own family, we were the kind of a Catholic family where you just did what the church said and you followed all the rules and so on. And we were, you know, in that sense, very, very good Catholics, my parents and all of us. And we weren't good at communicating in levels like, well, certainly about sex. that didn't happen. But then when I went to the seminary, where you would expect that maybe you would begin to get some understanding of something like this, I'm sure it only intensified the kind of the homophobia with which I grew up, because seminaries, of course, are all male institutions, and you would think that they would try and help you understand something about your own sexuality, but never. The whole time I was in the seminary for 12 years, and the thing I remember, you know, I can laugh about it now. We used to get conferences. It would come up two or three times a year. We'd have a spiritual conference once a week from the spiritual director of the seminary. That was all through high school, all through college. And the major seminary was, in fact, four nights a week. We would get these conferences from the rector. And two or three times a year, there would be a talk about particular friendships. Well, I didn't know what they were talking about. I really didn't. See, now I know. They were kind of warning us to be careful not to get into a relationship with another guy. But that's how it was talked about, particular friendships. And all I knew was that if you were seen too often with the same person chatting in the corridor, or certainly later on when you had a room, if somebody was in your room, it was really bad news, and very often somebody would be dropped suddenly. And I never even thought about it that much, but that's what was going on, and I didn't know it, because they never spoke in open terms about this whole phenomenon of gay people. And even when I got into the major seminary and studied moral theology, the time that we spent on sins against sex, and you know, it was terrible, the divisions they would use, the natural sins, unnatural sins, and some would be worse than others. It was just extraordinary, but totally uncomprehending about the real situation. And so that's how I learned, in a sense, to be a priest, out of that experience and what I learned, or in fact, what I didn't learn in the seminary. Never got any real understanding of sexuality. It just wasn't taught. And so I had no real awareness of how to deal with this question when it came up later. Well, you know, years went on, and I was ordained a bishop in 1968. And so in some ways became much more public in the church. I was certainly much more public in the diocese, but then because I got involved in various movements of one thing or another, I was much more of a public figure. And and my younger brother had been himself in the seminary for a few years. As I look back, I can see a pattern in his life that I didn't pay any attention to at the time, but he was suddenly dropped from the seminary, and there was no explanation. And he never said much about it to anybody. And my mother was very upset because it just seemed unfair. Well, as I look back, I'm pretty sure what happened is he was involved with someone and got dropped. And they never said anything. It was, I guess, probably would be considered confidential and so on. But then he got married and seemed to have a good relationship. In fact, he and his wife had four children, four daughters, and they lived together for probably between 15 and 20 years. I forget exactly how many years, but then they moved away. And again, I can see that sort of a pattern of gay people. Often they, because they can't tell anybody, they move away from their family and so on. And so they moved to the West Coast and lived out there. And then they were divorced. By this time, his children were, well, in their upper teens, or the oldest one at least, would have been like 17 or 18 years old, so I'm sure they'd been married 20 years or so. And we kept contact all that time, but then it must have been like about 4 or 5 years ago now, or about, no, it's got to be more, 6 or 7 years ago. It was shortly before I was invited to speak at New Ways Ministry. My brother sent a letter around to all the family, and it was a very lengthy, detailed letter. He sent it to my brothers and sisters, my mother. My dad, by this time, was dead. He died in 1976, and the letter was his coming out, telling us about his whole situation. Well, I'm not really happy about myself. I have to say this, but at the time it just made me very angry. I knew it was in the letter, but I never read it. I just threw it aside because I was angry that he would. I never quite figured, or tried to sort it all out. What made me so angry about this? But I think part of it was my own concern about myself, which of course is very selfish. That if my brother becomes known as a gay person, people in the church are going to wonder about me too, and what's that mean? How could that be? Because the church has not been very open, of course, to gay or lesbian people, and so I was angry and never said a word to any. I knew my sisters and brothers got the letter, but we never spoke to one another about it. Nobody said anything to anybody else. I knew my mother got the letter, and I knew it must have been very hard for her. But I didn't say anything, and I'm not saying this with any great pride of myself, because I should have, obviously. Well, that went on for maybe a year or so, and I used to stop and visit my mother at least once a week or so, because I've always been in Detroit. I grew up in Detroit, and I was there as a bishop. And so when I would have a confirmation or some event nearby, afterwards I'd stop over at 9:30, and I could always count on getting something to eat. And just visiting for a couple of hours. And so I used to do that regularly. But one night in the spring, my mother by this time was in her upper 80s. She was probably about 86 at the time. She died when she was 88. And she was in 86 or 87. And she was trying to make sure everything was taken care of, you know, as far as her children were concerned. I have my oldest sister was in an institution from the time she was very young because of brain damage when she was born. And that was one thing my mother was very concerned about, that when she died, what's going to happen to Loretta. And we'd worked out a way that she was very much at peace with that. But then this one night as I was leaving, we stepped outside the front door and I said goodbye, but then she came out after me and was, so she wanted to say something. And I had no idea what, but it was obvious she was talking, and so, or upset and concerned. And so as we were just chatting there for a few minutes, and she just said to me, she said, she needed to know, she said, is Dale going to hell? And I knew what she was talking about. She obviously had been part of the church all these years, and for her, someone who was gay was evil and going to hell. And it just, I'm sure she couldn't be at peace with that question in her mind. Well, you know, even though I hadn't dealt with the whole thing very well myself, I had at least begun to come, you know, to understand a little bit better. And I knew right then that I had to say something to her, obviously. I had to answer a question. And I just, I knew what the answer. I said, no, of course not. God made Dan that way. And God isn't going to put him in hell because God made Dan a gay person. Now, it wasn't Dan didn't choose it. That's the way Dan is. That's who he is. And God doesn't send us to hell because of who we are. And so I said it, and I, you know, kind of brought it all out into the open, and it obviously would be very consoling to my mother. And I know when I said it, it wasn't just to be consoling. I wasn't just trying to make her feel good so she could die in peace. I knew that was the truth. And I don't know why, I just had never said it before, and never really dealt with it before. But I knew that was the truth. And so I said it to her, and so then when I went to New Ways Ministry not too long after that, I still hadn't been public about it. I hadn't spoken to anybody else about it, but I decided it's time to say this publicly and to say, I'm a bishop and I have a gay brother and it's okay. And he's part of our family. His partner is accepted as part of our family. We visit there, they visit, and it's okay. And I have discovered since then that this was a very important thing for me to do, because speaking at New Ways Ministry, it had a very important impact on the people there. But then subsequently, this whole, what I said there was written up in the National Catholic Reporter. There was a big feature story. They used the headline that came from Cardinal Ratzinger's 1986 document that said, you know, about being disordered. And the headline was, he's not disordered, he's my brother. I do resent that anybody would be termed disordered because they happen to be gay or lesbian. And so it appeared there, but it also, one of the local reporters from the Detroit Free Press saw this, and so came and interviewed me and did a big story. It was a feature in a Sunday Free Press. It went all over the state. So, it became very, very public. And since then, I've had the opportunity to speak I've done homophobia workshops, some with New Ways Ministry, other with other people in the Detroit area and in the Windsor, Ontario area. And in very different parts of the country, I spent 3.5 days one day a year ago over in St. Paul, Minneapolis, going to different places, talking in different settings about this whole question. And I must say that because of this, I have had correspondence from people all over the country. And to me, it's been a very, very enriching experience. I've heard from people that have gone through very, very hard times, gay people, lesbian people, priests who are afraid to let their bishop know that they're gay, and they don't know whom to turn to. They've written to me and shared their stories with me. And parents, many, many parents from around the country have written to me. And I've been able to write back and able to communicate with people and help, I think, in a lot of ways, just in the kind of a ministry. And I am very blessed because of that. I've met tremendous people who have helped me to understand even better what I was struggling with a few years ago and how we all have to work our way through it. But once you do, you discover that there are many, many beautiful people there who are suffering a lot. And it's so important to reach out. And then it's so important for us to support one another. And within the church, we need to develop much more of a pastoral ministry so that the alienation and the hurt and the pain will all be eliminated. And that our gay brothers and sisters, or in your case, sons and daughters, will know that they're fully welcome within our church community. Now, we've got a long way to do that, a long way to go, but I'm sure that as we all work together on this, we can make it happen. And it's going to change our church, but it'll change our church for the better. So I'm very happy that I'm here with you tonight, and we'll have some time with you tomorrow. I feel enriched just by being in your presence, and again, I thank Bob and Janine and New Ways Ministry for drawing me into this in the way that they have, and enabling me to be much more of a sensitive and compassionate minister than I ever was before. So thank you very much.
I wonder how your brother bishops have, has your coming out helped them to deal with the issues as well?
The question is, how have other bishops, my coming out, has that helped them or drawn them into, I suppose, some conversation or something like that? And the answer basically is no. Bishops don't seem to want to talk about this very much yet, at least. Now, I'm going to be given an award of some sort by New Ways Ministry in November, and I don't know how you communicated that to various people, but one bishop wrote me a note and congratulated me on getting this award, Jack McReed from Owensboro. But he's the only one. Now, I don't know how many bishops have heard about it, but I don't expect that many will would do what Bishop McGrath did. However, they're going to be confronted a little bit. and we'll see. Maybe it will do some good. I know there are some other bishops that would be sympathetic, but there hasn't been any conversation since it happened, and I'm sure a lot of them know because they saw the NCR. This award is going to be given, I picked the night, it's going to be in Washington, and so to make it easier, I said, well, let's do it when I'm going to be there anyway. Well, I'm going to be there for the bishops' meeting. So Tuesday night, the bishops' meeting starts on Monday. Tuesday night, there's going to be a dinner, I think, and the award. And I'm sure it's going to get some attention, and bishops are going to know that it's happening. And maybe some will be willing to talk about it. I hope so. I'm certainly at the point where I'm very happy to talk about it. I suppose there will be times where if something comes before the bishops about discriminatory laws or things like that, that I will speak up about it. So it may come up in discussions with other bishops, but so far it hasn't.
When Bishop McCann on Long Island, the Rockland Central Diocese, has given his approval for a mission statement, and it's expanded to 3 different support groups for parents. It started as one, it's gotten so large that there are now 3 groups.
Bishop McCann has started 3 groups, or within that diocese there are 3 groups?
We used to live on Long Island, we now live in Florida, and I was up on Long Island for the summer, and I heard there was something. I called the bishops all home, and they told me they didn't know anything about it. Then I called the chancery, and they didn't know anything either. So she said, well, I'll check around, and I'll give me your name and number, and I'll call you back, and I never heard. And then through networking, I found somebody who told me that the bishop had approved their mission statement, and that now with 3 groups.
Okay, well, see,
it's a very secret statement, because I live on Long Island and I don't know anything about it, and I'm very active in pursuing this. I want to ask you a question. One of the biggest groups of homophobic people who are homophobic are the teachers in the Catholic school. And how can we reach them, especially religious brothers? I have major problems with that when my son was coming out. And when I came after the weekend back here, I went back to the school and spoke to some of the people there, and I said my son was hurt so terribly by their approach to him trying to speak about the issue. And I said, would you like me to come and speak, or they don't want to know anything about it? And I think that's a real problem.
Yeah, what age level is your son?
My son is now 26, but he... My husband was dying of cancer, and we had really major problems because of that. And he was in a Catholic high school, and he was told by one of the brothers there that if he would say anything more about it, they would remove him from the school. And here, we have all these problems at home, and so I went back to the school because I really want to do something about it, that nobody else has to go to that. My son is out, and he's fine, and he's not actually.
Well, how did it come up in the school again, though? Is he a teacher there?
No, he was a student. And I went back to the school to say, this has happened to my son when he was in your school, and how do you deal with that? You have to do something about that. But they don't want to...
No, right. Most of the schools don't deal with it at all, I don't think. In Catholic schools or public schools either, for that matter. It's a very controversial thing when they try to put in this curriculum for diversity or something like that, whatever they call it. It becomes very controversial. I think at the present time, it's kind of a hit and miss situation where you'll find, just like you'll find some priests that can be very sensitive and very open, you may find some schools, but you'll find other schools where it's just not even spoken about. And so that's part of what we have to begin to change, so that there is an openness. No one should go through all of Catholic education without having some awareness of who gay people and lesbian people are, and how we need to respect them and accept them and minister. But I'm sure that there's a lot of schools where the kids just wouldn't dare to say who they are. And because it would be abused by other students, but then they wouldn't get support from the faculty either.
But the faculty should be sensitive to that issue.
Well, they should be, I agree. And that's why the kind of workshops that New Ways Ministry does throughout the country are very important. And I'm sure sometimes you must have people from schools attending those workshops. But it's going to take a long time to bring about the sort of change that we need to have happen. I wish I could tell you, something more positive, but when you have the situation where bishops aren't ready to deal with the question, certainly in schools and parishes they're not going to deal with the question very well. But it's changing, so I hope you wouldn't be too discouraged. I mean, I can see things changing very rapidly, and so it's going to get much better as we go along. Let me switch over to this side for a minute, and then we'll come back.
Do you have any hints to give us on how to approach our bishop? How do we begin to...
Approach the priest?
The bishop.
Oh, the bishop.
Yes.
Well, it's going to vary a lot from diocese to diocese. It depends on how you can approach the bishop on other questions, too. Right now, I think I would have to say that there would be a quite sizable number of bishops that would not be very approachable because their attitude would be, it's wrong, and the best they would do is what that 86 instruction says, that somehow you're supposed to be very compassionate to the person, but you condemn the sin. And that isn't helpful. In fact, it's very hurtful. And so I don't know. I think, as with so many other questions, what we need to do in the church is to draw the experience of homosexual people into the church's reflection. And when we've never done that before. That's the way that lots of questions are clarified, drawing from people's experience. I remember in the Bishop's Conference, a different issue, but some years ago, there was the United States was used or allowed was allowed to use the Catholic Church of the United States allowed to use what they called special norms for the marriage tribunals, they were called the American norms, and it was a different set of procedures by which you would grant annulments with different kinds of evidence, different causes, and so on. And it was supposed to be an experience, and it went on for, say, 5 years, I think it was. And we began to grant many more annulments because there's a whole different understanding of marriage and what it takes to have a marriage be a sacrament and so on. And Rome became upset and concerned because there are too many annulments being granted in the United States. So they sent a letter from the signature or someplace over there saying, these norms are coming to an end. You'll have to revert to the regular rules in the Code of Canon Law. I couldn't believe it. At the bishops' meeting when that was presented to us, the number of bishops that stood up and said, no, we're not going to accept that. We've got to go and fight this one. We need those norms in our church. And the bishops in the United States aren't usually that way. They will be very loyal to whatever Rome says. And I had to ask myself, what's going on here? Well, the answer was obvious. There isn't one bishop in that room who doesn't have a brother or a sister in a second marriage or a niece or a nephew. I mean, a very close family member. And they know that people in second marriages often are very good practicing Catholics, and the first marriage was a mistake and was something that broke up. I mean, it was a broken relationship and could not be healed and so on. So they knew from firsthand experience.